NPR.
This week, COVID-19 has continued its relentless spread across the U.S.
The U.S. now has the most confirmed cases of any country in the world.
And as much as coronavirus is a health story, it is also a story of scarcity. Not enough. Not enough tests, not enough masks, not enough ventilators, not enough doctors, not enough hospital beds.
Economics is the study of how to best allocate limited resources. And that is exactly what emergency rooms across the city and across the country are doing right now, trying to figure out how to best allocate limited resources.
Jessica Von Voorhees is an emergency room doctor at New York Presbyterian Methodist Hospital in Brooklyn. She's been an ER doctor for 13 years. She actually lives just a few blocks down the street from me. We even apparently go to the same coffee shop. At least we used to. But I spoke to Jessica by phone, both because of social distancing requirements and because she has been working almost nonstop for weeks. She was just on a very rare break. And she talked to me about how she makes these decisions and how these decisions get made in hospitals.
Today on the show, scarcity. Who gets a ventilator? Who gets a hospital bed? Who gets a test? How doctors are dealing with these tragically difficult questions of scarcity. And what COVID-19 looks like from the ground.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Chobani Oat, made to taste just like milk. It's creamy, frothy, and great with coffee and cookies. But without the dairy, because it's not milk, it's almost milk. New Chobani Oat. Support for NPR comes from Newman's Own Foundation, working to nourish the common good by donating all profits from Newman's Own food products to charitable organizations that seek to make the world a better place. More information is available at newmansownfoundation.org.
Jessica Von Voorhees is an emergency room doctor at New York Presbyterian Methodist Hospital in Brooklyn. And she said she first started noticing a lot of coronavirus patients a couple of weeks ago.
What was initially just like a trickle of patients turned into a steady stream and now just like a complete constant flow. So on a busy day in my emergency department, we see more than 300 patients in a day. So that's a lot. And I work 12-hour shifts. So it's a lot of people coming through. And I can tell you that now at least 98% of the patients I'm seeing have active COVID-19. Like they all.
Really?
Yeah. Every patient has it. Patients that are there for other reasons, like sprained my ankle or I like got shot. You'll do a chest x-ray for some other reason and they have COVID-19 in their lungs. Like everyone has it.
I mean, what does the emergency room look like? Is it different than it normally is?
Yeah,
it's
actually different in a couple different ways. So first of all, people who can are avoiding the ERs, staying away with like the plague, right? Because everyone's like, oh, if you go to the ER, you're going to catch the coronavirus. So we're just seeing patient after patient after patient that's in horrible respiratory distress, you know, drowning with fluid in their lungs, struggling to breathe. I mean, these are just very sick patients. The worst part too is that I feel like normally, you know, you admit someone to the hospital and they kind of get better, but these patients seem to sort of take a dive. Like a lot of people sort of start to get better and then get worse. Somewhere between day 7 and 10, there's sort of all this group of people that all of a sudden gets worse.
Is it crowded? Like, are you having like trouble accommodating everyone?
We have huge volumes of people flooding the ER wanting to be tested, most of whom were turning away and not testing. So that's the highest volume of just like patient after patient after patient after patient. We've taken over multiple other areas of the hospital besides the usual ER where we typically see them. So we've taken over doctor's offices. We got a tent, like the FEMA, the federal government gave us 2 tents to see patients outside. So we put those up on outside of the hospital. So we're seeing COVID patients in there too.
And these are people who are like coming into like wanting to get tested.
Yes, exactly.
Who are worried.
Yeah, they're worried. And they do have COVID-19. You know, like there's no doubt about that. But the DOH, the New York City Department of Health, is really not testing people unless they are sick enough to be admitted to the hospital. So mostly what we're doing is turning these people away. And so I just feel like we're still like we haven't hit some kind of peak of patients, or in other words, hit rock bottom, essentially.
It still feels like it's building.
Yeah, it feels like it's still building. it changes every day. Like every day you go in, it's worse and worse. Like shift by shift, it's worse. It's different each day, which is totally crazy. Like, when does your job change by the day, you know?
Is it scary to be working there now?
I'd say it's more like busy and stressful than scary. People are kind of like, you know, snapping at each other, and there's just this constant stream of sick people to be taken care of. But there's also been a lot of camaraderie, kind of like we're in it all in it together, like in the trenches. And it's been kind of nice in some ways. The community also, like, literally every day people drop off food for us to eat, and it's really, really nice. I feel like we have just been constantly fed for the past 2 weeks.
You're in charge of the ER, and so you're sort of like looking out for all the different resources that you need. How has that changed?
Well, masks and gowns and stuff like that, we have enough of, but we're aggressively rationing and hanging on to and reusing.
Do you have enough ventilators?
We do, actually.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. How many ventilators do you guys have?
Well, apparently our respiratory therapist has been gathering vents for a while and like prepping for this. And they were saying we had 55 patients on vents, and we had 70 vents in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. You have 70 vents?
Yeah, that's what they said.
That's like only 15 ventilators left.
Right.
That's kind of getting, that's
you're getting there. Little... Right. It's like, how many? Yeah. I keep waiting for them to call downstairs and be like, okay, there are four left. Like, you have to choose. And it just hasn't happened yet.
And then you have to start picking who the people who really, really most need a ventilator are.
Yeah. And even maybe who to save, right? So like who has the most likelihood of surviving? Because you don't want to put someone on a vent that you think they won't survive. You know, do you save somebody who's younger because they have more years ahead of them? Or do you save somebody who's middle-aged because they have knowledge and experience?
That's not a call that you've had to
never
make.
No, never.
But you're worried that you might have to start?
Yeah. In Italy, they certainly had to make those decisions because they ran out of ventilators, and they started to just choose younger people or whatever, you know? But they said it's hard because sometimes you're sort of like, these two are a tie. They're very similar.
That's a horrible choice to have to make.
I know.
Have you thought about that a lot or?
Well, it's really the concept of triage, you know, sorting patients into like more severe and less severe. You're trying to provide the most good for the greatest number. So I feel like I could actually make those decisions if I had to. And that's a good thing because you want somebody who could make that decision, right?
But do you think that is coming with questions of resources, possibly like ventilators and things like
that? Maybe. And they're doing creative things. Like, it turns out you can actually put more than one person on a ventilator. The machine itself is strong enough to give breaths to maybe even three people. So that, which is kind of crazy. Like, I definitely have never seen that done before, but the respiratory therapists were saying that that's possible, and it effectively doubles the number of vents that you have.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Have you seen a lot of people dying from coronavirus?
Yeah. Not ones that I've admitted to the hospital. Like, certainly we're seeing people come in cardiac arrest and not make it.
Is it mostly very older people?
It's actually been a really broad range. So the patients coming in with coronavirus and needing oxygen, I've seen people in their 30s who have no health problems. So like, we all know this is a really deadly virus, but I feel like, say you 1% of the population that catches it, which I would say most of the population of New York City is going to catch it at some point, say 1% of people die. Well, that's a lot of people, right? We're all going to know someone. And the mortality rate overall is 1%. But, you know, in the over 70 population, it's like 8%. So if 8% of grandmas and grandpas across the country die, that's a lot of people. So I feel like the next wave that's going to be coming, which is really sad and we all kind of have to emotionally prepare for, is the wave of death that's coming. There's going to be this really like big national like bereavement, and people should be ready to know. I feel like we're still at that friend of a friend phase, and eventually it's just going to get closer and closer to home, and everyone's going to know someone.
We haven't peaked yet.
We haven't peaked yet. Like, I'm going to be happy when we peak and things start going down, because then at least, you know, it can't get any worse.
Well, gosh, thank you so much for the work you're doing. Yeah. Really, really.
No worries.
And thank you for taking the time to talk with me.
Yeah, happy to do it.
This episode of The Indicator was produced by Darius Rafieyan. It was fact-checked by Brittany Cronin. Our editor is Patty Hirsch, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.